Thank you, everyone. Again, I'm Aaron Mullally. Come from Rasmussen College in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. Like I said, I'm just here today to talk to you about flipping the classroom, what it is, and not only my experience with it, but my success with it, and hopefully with the goal of planting ideas into, you know, into your teaching practices as well. So again, basically my thesis statement or the goal for the presentation is to give you ideas about how to basically become more connected with your students by using technology and basically digital media for your students to have constant access to inside of and outside of the classroom. And in doing that, how can you use that media to create a more interactive, active learning environment and deliver a more quality education? So basically, I mean, we're essentially talking about a paradigm shift here. We're talking about shifting kind of the traditional model of teaching and molding and adapting it to advancing technology and practices. So basically, if we kind of think about traditional teaching and learning, is it safe to say that this is what a traditional classroom on average looks like? Whether we're talking K-12, higher ed, I mean, obviously not every single classroom, but, you know, typically, we have a teacher, a professor standing in front of a group of students. There's lecturing, there is talking, there's, you know, some Socratic interaction. But for the most part, it's the teacher projecting knowledge onto the students. The students listen as long as they stay awake. Anyone have that problem ever? Once in a while. But in a nutshell, it's very teacher-centered. A classroom like this is very teacher-centered. And then what we do then is we send our students home. We have them study. We have them do homework. We do some group work, some project work in class. But realistically, what are we doing with this method of teaching? We're focusing heavily on knowledge. But what do we kind of not focus on as much as that we should? Application. How many people here teach at the college level? Have you ever heard a student, go out on an internship or get a job and then they come back and say, "I learned more on the job than I did going to school"? Does that just bug you? Bugs me. Drives me nuts. All right, then we shouldn't have students saying things like that. We really shouldn't. And with flipping, basically what we're doing is we are focusing more. I mean, obviously the knowledge is going to come through education, but we're also focusing on application. We're assessing how students apply this knowledge in a more active classroom. And flipping, this idea of flipping is not a new idea. It's just gotten really, really popular over the last few years. And the reason why it's gotten so popular is because technology is integrated and infused into our lives a lot more. My mind was blown the first time I ever saw a dry erase board. I mean, I thought chalkboards were just all teachers ever used. Then I thought, wow, you could write on the wall with a marker and not get in trouble. That's awesome. And, now look at this. I mean, how many people use an interactive whiteboard in their classroom? These things are all over the place. Plus now we've got document cameras, screener, iMovie, just regular old, camcorders. Now there's software like iMovie and Windows Movie Maker where you can edit and customize the media that you're creating. There's a lot we can do. There's a lot we can do with this, and technology is allowing us to do this because prior to all this technology getting into our lives, think about it. If we just send a student home and say, okay, go read out of this chapter, then we'll come back and do something in the classroom, how's that any different than just giving them homework? It's really not. But now what we're doing, hence the term flipping, is we are providing students with these lecture videos. They're doing the lecture on their own at home, and then we can actually do hands-on activities in the classroom. Like I said, focus more on the application side of education. And it's something important to think about with this, because I hear a lot of discussion about flipping the classroom, and I hear a lot of discussion about the technology, watching videos. I'm assuming this isn't the very first time you've heard of flipping the classroom. You've had probably some kind of discussion, heard about it, read about it somewhere. But what I notice is there's a lot of talk, just really most of the discussion is on the media, the video side of things, but not about how the media is changing how we deliver an education, how it changes the classroom. And that's something that I think we really need to focus on, and that's, you know, obviously my main goal here. Now, how I got into this was I had a professor by the name of Doc C, or Dr. Gerald Cezadlo. This might be a long shot, but any Saint Scholastica from Duluth alumni? Didn't think so. The College of Saint Scholastica up in Duluth, that's where I went to graduate school. And there was a professor up there, Doc C. He was the most brilliant lecturer I've ever encountered in my life. The man could just take the most complex machine on the planet, the human body, and just paint beautiful pictures with his words. He could just lecture. And he used what I like to refer to as garage logic. You know, he could just break a complex thing down into simple terms, applicable terms. And what he did was, all he did was, is he just recorded his voice lecture and he put it up on his own website. So you could just access it, you know, if you were sick and missed class or you were studying and you just needed to listen to him explain it again. Because in most of the classes he taught, he didn't even use a textbook. He was just that good at lecturing. And I realized, I remembered how much that helped me. How much that helped me. So I wanted to give back to my students, you know, through this. So what I did was, is I created a Facebook account called Aaron at Rasmussen, where I would put up lecture notes on there. I would record very short videos, throw them on there. I would take URLs to websites and put them on there, you know, as like a status update. And so there was a lot of information on there. And obviously, you know, I didn't force any of my students to obviously join into that. I mean, it's their choice. And I can understand in K-12 how obviously that may not work because, I mean, a lot of districts have blocks on it. You know, it's just Facebook can be a little weird, and I understand. But I started to notice, though, that it was working, that I was already connecting to my students, especially a lot more outside of the classroom by providing them with all this extra material. One of the drawbacks with Facebook, though, is you just had to go every which way but where to find the information. You know, if you wanted to read lecture notes, bless you, you had to go somewhere else. You know, you had to go to one section. If you wanted to watch a video, you had to go to another, you know, to another area to watch a video. If you wanted to see a URL that I posted on there, you had to scroll all over the place. I mean, there was a lot of good information on there, but it was just all over. All right. So then, one of the other problems I had with Facebook was, is at the time, I don't know if this has changed or not because I haven't put a video on there in who knows how long, is you can only upload a video up to 15 minutes. And, you know, in high school, I mean, videos typically are going to be a little shorter for high school students anyway because, you know, I mean, you're talking probably 15 minutes max for, you know, maybe the average supplemental video for a high school class, because how much time do you spend in a high school class? I mean, if you do block scheduling, you're looking at 90 minutes. If you don't do block scheduling, you're looking at, what, 45 to 50 minutes tops. All right? And so this is when I said, well, okay, a lot of people use YouTube. And I'm just, you know, everyone, you know, my students have heard of this, so I'll start using this. And I especially started using this when I started teaching a little more online, because when I looked at the online class, you know, there was some good material already, you know, created for it. Some good, you know, it was developed all right. But the problem was there was just no connection between me, the teacher, and the students who were elsewhere. So I wanted to figure out a way to take the four walls of the classroom and the digital world and merge them together. And, excuse me, so what I started doing is I started recording, you know, obviously longer lecture videos, and I upload them on YouTube. And then I started taking those videos, and I would post them right in the announcement section of the online class. So they log in, boom, they have this lecture video right there. And obviously, you know, with online classes, you can put, you know, the dates in which these videos would be released, and then they would come down as you move on from topic to topic, material to material. But they had me right there. And the cool thing about doing this as well is that the students are in control of this part of flipped teaching. They're in control of the lecture. They can hit pause at any time they want. Wouldn't that just be a dream of a student just to say, ah, teacher, be quiet, pause. I'm sick of listening to you, pause. You know, I have to go to the bathroom, pause. You know, I mean, how many times have you sat in the classroom, you know, you had to hold your bladder. you know. Or, you know, plus nowadays we're seeing a lot more of the quote-unquote non-traditional students coming into higher education who are, you know, especially in this down economy, who are going back to school, who are out of work and going back to school to try to get an education and get a job in an area where there are jobs. But, you know, the thing is, which is great, but these students have busy lifestyles. They have families. And this is a, you know, obviously this is great because, you know, they can use this to work around that busy schedule. All right, but then YouTube was great, but the problem with YouTube is I couldn't do anything else. I could upload a video and put in a little caption and describe what the video is about. Now, and one other thing I want to say about YouTube as well is that when I was putting those videos in the announcement section of my class, see, my class was a blended course, so they did the lecture online and they came onto campus to do a lab, and we had open labs, so I didn't run every single open lab. Another allied health instructor would run that. But what I noticed, what was interesting, is after when I started putting those YouTube videos up there, the students who were watching in my class who were watching those videos were making sure that they were coming in to when I was running the open lab at the times I was there because they felt a connection. You know, they had a voice, they had someone talking to them, and then they could meet me in person, and then we worked together in the lab. That was cool. That was really neat to see that. All right. But then, you know, like I said, I was fairly limited with YouTube as well. And then I found the website called Sophia.org. Basically, I could take the work I was doing on Facebook and YouTube and combine all of that together. Because what you do on Sophia is you create tutorials. You create tutorials, and they're nice because you can customize the tutorials. You can put videos, you can upload PowerPoints, you can type up notes in there, and you can arrange them in whatever order you want. So that was great because, like I said, all the work I was doing, scattering all over the place on these two sites, I could throw together in one specific tutorial on one specific subject, and I've been using that ever since. Obviously, I still leave, you know, YouTube open to my students as well. But, you know, like I said, most of them tend to flock to Sophia just because I can organize my information better on there. I can customize it as to how I want it on there. And like I said, it's been working well, which I will talk more about towards the end of the presentation about my actual success with that. So here are just some examples of some items that I flip. The integumentary system. What is that? Skin, yes, skin. Skin is 50 minutes tops, and you can get undergraduate anatomy students everything they need to know. It's not the most in-depth topic. It's important, don't get me wrong, but there's just not a lot to it. I mean, it's skin. You sweat, and it keeps you from getting sick. So what I decided to do, because typically around anatomy one, you start out just teaching basic cell biology, kind of refresher material, because obviously a lot of cell molecular biology is integrated into A&P. And then you move on to histology, the study of tissues, you know, how cells compose tissues, and then skin, bones, and other materials. That's the average model for an anatomy class. So what I wanted to do was something I experimented with, and it worked, is I lecture in class about histology. And what I decided to do was, instead of wasting a whole other class period, you know, or 50 minutes of another class period talking about skin, what I decided to do was I spend, because I teach 2 days a week. Okay, my classes are 2 days a week. They're a couple hours a crack. So what I do is on that first day of the week when we get to histology, I spend that whole class just hammering on histology. And it's, you know, because it's a very important baseline, you know, kind of fundamental foundational topic they need to know. And then what I have them do is, whether it's YouTube or Sophia, like I said, it's up to them. But just as long as they get this done going, you know, before the next class, is I have them watch this lecture video. And then as you can see, there are some learning objectives right here. Because with my class, what I do is on the first day of class, I give them, for anatomy 1 and 2, there's about 300 very specific learning objectives that I typed up based off of the Human Anatomy and Physiology Society, kind of what they expect out of an anatomy class. And I just made it a lot more specific. So what I do in the Sophia tutorial is I put the lecture video in there. I think it's about 17 learning objectives that this video covers. And so they see these objectives, they see the video, and then what I do is I combine the histology lab and the integumentary system lab together. Because histology, has anyone ever done a histology lab, you know, in basic undergraduate biology class? You just look at tissues under a microscope and identify tissues. You know, it's interesting, but there's not a lot to it. You know, so you can do a little bit more with that. A good idea though, because if you just tell students to go out and watch a video and come to class prepared the next day, how many do you think are actually going to listen? And we're talking about red-blooded human beings who are students here. You know, so what's very important is if you're sending your students out to do this, you have to have some kind of assessment or activity set up to ensure that they're actually doing what you tell them. So what I like to do is to kind of tee things off is I like to have a little quiz. You know, not the big 10, 12 questions at the most. A quiz, you know, to lead off, and obviously those points aren't optional. That goes towards their grade. You know, so you have to sell that to them. And then I start, you know, then we do the labs, and then I go around and I help them out and I work with them, and it's worked really well. You know, because I've noticed the, you know, because then when I give them a test, I test them on histology and the skin all at the same time, and I notice by doing this method that scores have been good. And I'm having an extra 50 minutes in class to focus more on a topic that I think is really important to focus on. Bones. And we're not talking the TV show here. This is not a topic you want to lecture about. Here's the femur. Here's the head of the femur. Here are the trochanters. Here are the condyles, epicondyles. Basically, here's a bunch of bones and the bumps and landmarks on them. That's a great way to put people to sleep. I've done it. So what I decided to do is, these are really short videos, is I took all the major areas, you know, I did the axial versus appendicular, you know, the main segments of the skeleton, and then I separated out the limbs, you know, the arm, forearm, wrist, you know, leg, you know, thighs, legs, and so on. I made videos about those and about the bones and landmarks I want them to identify. So when I get to the skeletal system, instead of spending one whole class period, you know, putting them in a coma, what I do now is I tee off this activity for maybe about an hour. I spend about an hour just covering the real basics, the important information they need to know. And then I just have them go right in and start looking at bones. So again, they have these lecture videos on Sophia and YouTube. And then on Sophia, I also uploaded practice labeling sheets for them to print out and to work on, which they do in class, they do outside of class. I've had students make flashcards out of these. It's really neat when you kind of start to set students off on their own and you kind of get to see how innovative they are. It's neat to do that. So again, I get to spend more time in the classroom with my students doing more hands-on practical activities instead of just, here's a bunch of bones, let's talk about them. Now, before I move on to the next slide, this is kind of a segue into the next thing. What do you notice about those learning objectives? It's okay, you can say they're bad. They are. What's that? Well, they're not only lower level. Which landmarks on the femur do I want them to know and identify? That was when I first started teaching, is when I wrote those. But seriously, know the femur. And know the femur is the bone of the thigh. Know the landmarks. Which landmarks? Okay. It's important that when we are preparing these flip lessons and we're creating the lessons for our students, y'all familiar with the concept of backwards design? You know, planning out your learning objectives first, thinking about the assessment next, and then actually creating the lecture/lesson itself. And it's important to, especially when you're creating a flip lesson, to really think about the learning objectives first. Because they're essentially the learning outcomes. They're what we want our students to get out of this lesson. And at the same time, it's a method for us to organize our thoughts. I mean, because that's what we're really doing when we're typing out learning objectives. We're putting our thoughts down on paper and organizing them. And we have to make sure that they're specific, and we don't want to create confusion. I mean, students are confused anyway. It's kind of cool. We get paid to confuse people. That's what education's all about, creating a constant state of confusion. Then when students get comfortable with the concept, you confuse them more and then make them work hard, and then it's great. But since we're sending the students out to do 50% of this lesson on their own, watching lecture videos, we definitely want to eliminate as much confusion as possible. And a start to that is by creating good, solid, specific learning objectives. Identify the following landmarks of the femur. List them out. You know, if you're an English teacher, write a complete sentence. Okay, what are the parts of a complete sentence? And then think about the assessment piece next. Because you're just wasting everybody's time if you come up with these great learning objectives, but then the hands-on activity, the assessment activity you do in class does not tie into those. Or it's just weak. So you have to make sure that they map out well with one another. Because we don't want to send our students out to watch these lecture videos that we put in a lot of time and effort to create, and then all of a sudden come into class and we're not even really doing much related to them. And then obviously think about the lecture, the video, what you're going to put in the video from there. Now, one of the things I hear a lot of people talk about and say is that this is great for science. It is. I mean, science already has a lab component built into it. But who's to say you can't flip history lessons? English, math. You know, I just went to, earlier this year, I spoke at a, you know, I went to a local high school and talked about this because they were moving, you know, they were creating, you know, a one-on-one initiative with their teachers and students, and it was mandatory for their faculty to be doing this, or at the bare minimum, at least creating videos to supplement their current lessons. And it was cool because some of the teachers were already doing this, and almost all the ones that were already doing it weren't science teachers. They were English and history teachers. This is a great way to set up a debate. One of the classes I teach is medical law and ethics. I almost never lectured in that class. I would talk a little bit, but then I would give them a lot of articles, have them do a lot of writing. They did a lot of debating, a lot of discussing. But me talking in class was just a little piece of the puzzle, just to tee off what we really wanted to cover. They did the majority of the learning on their own. You know, with English classes, you can have a writing lab. A great thing you can do is have students do some writing samples. You know, you give them a lecture video, talk to them about, you know, good ways let's just go with the complete sentence thing just because it's simple and it's on the top of my mind. How to write a complete sentence, the components of a complete sentence, and so on. What's a great way to evaluate that? Have them peer evaluate. That's a great way to kick that off. Have them come in, get together in groups, look at each other's work, and evaluate it. And then you, the teacher, the educator, can go around from group to group to group and moderate how they're doing. And then that's a great segue into what you want to cover in class that day. You know, your assessment activity does not have to cover the entire class. You don't have to flip every single lesson. In fact, I don't think people should flip every single lesson. There's some topics I just feel more comfortable lecturing about, because I want direct interaction with my students, direct feedback from the discussion of the topic. But the nice thing about this is that you get direct feedback on the application when you're going around the class and looking at how they're performing the activities. All right. It's very important to provide visual resources for your students, especially if we're sending them off to do the lecture part on their own. You know, use images. Use examples. You folks familiar with document cameras, doc cams? Those would be great for math teachers, English teachers who are trying to demonstrate writing or going through an equation. You know, for me, I dissect a lot of stuff. It's always fun when my orders come in. You know, people order supplies. I order kidneys. And You know, but you know, but again, you can use those to create a good visual resource. Or if you are only limited to maybe doing an audio lecture, MP3, give them some kind of handout to go with the lecture itself for them to perform and work on. You know, the more visual you make it, the better. Because, I mean, we're all not one particular style of learning. We're a combination, but some are more than others. And that's kind of the cool thing about doing this as well, is that what's the buzz term for teaching to many different learning styles? Differentiated teaching, differentiated learning. And that's what's neat about this, is that, you know, you can, there are some students that are just very individual. This works well with them. There are some students that work better in groups. Well, guess what? They can do that in the classroom. And what's nice is that the students who work better in groups, but not as well as individuals, we have to you know, push them out of that comfort zone. This is a great way to do that. Vice versa with the folks who are better individuals and don't work as well with other people. I mean, we have to learn how to work together with others at some point in time. All right. So like I said, visual resources, have good, solid learning objectives, and test your technology. One of the first lecture videos I ever made. I'm not a huge fan of chemistry. Are there any chemistry teachers in here? I don't want to make you mad if there are. I know it's important, but I'm just not a fan of it. I like getting it over with when I have to teach it. I was 40 minutes into about an hour-long lecture video, and I realized my mic was on mute. I won't repeat what I said at the time, but a few choice words, but I wasn't happy. I just wasted 40 minutes. I had to do that all over again. So make sure you know your equipment, you test it to make sure all is well before you create these. And that's something else we should discuss. One thing I hear a lot of teachers say when I talk to teachers and I talk to educators is that they talk about the increased volume of time this is going to be on them. Yeah, it's going to be on the front end. But guess what? When you have your lecture media created, whether it's video, audio, you put these lessons together, do you have to recreate the videos again? Unless they're bad, no. You can use other people's lecture videos. I mean, there are so many educators out there now that are putting their lessons online. If you don't have to reinvent the wheel, don't reinvent the wheel. You know? So let's talk about how this has been working for me personally. After about a year of doing this, either flipping lessons or just creating, you know, supplemental video lectures to my lessons, one day I went into my dean's office and I just said to him, I said, you know, I notice I'm just hanging on to students a lot better. You know, my class, you know, students aren't dropping as much. And, you know, that flipped a switch in his head, so he decided to run some numbers. We found out prior to doing this, I had a 35% combined failure withdrawal rate. That's not cool. That's not good. In 1 year, I dropped that 20%. 20%. That's 20% more of my students were able to get an education and stay in my class and move on because they could watch these lecture videos at home. They could hit pause and rewind me. We got to be a lot more active and engaging in the classroom. They got a better education. Students are going to miss a class once in a while. Students are sick. Heck, I've had to miss classes before. January 2nd, my car got stolen. I couldn't quite get to work that day. But guess what? I had a bunch of lecture videos they could watch. They weren't thrilled about that on the first day of class. They thought they were going to have a freebie. But we were able to stay caught up. One of the experiences that's always stuck with me is I had this one student who was always kind of hovering around a B minus, C plus, kind of hovered around that range. We were covering the autonomic nervous system, the division of your nervous system that regulates all the unconscious organ activity of your body. And the student got really ill and missed both classes that week. And, you know, student was diligent, reached out to me and said, hey, you know, I'm sick, missed class, this isn't good. So real quickly what I did was, I already had two videos created which covered everything I would normally go over in class on the autonomic nervous system. So I went to Sophia, I threw them right in a tutorial, and I put, you know, the first video first, the second video second, so they could watch them, and so she could watch them in order. I emailed her the tutorial, and then I also emailed her to the URLs to my YouTube channel, and she watched the Sophia one just because it was easier for her. She showed up to class the following week and took the test with everybody else, the people who were there, got the highest grade on the test, wasn't even there. And like I said, this was a student who hovered around usually around a B minus C plus, got a 97%. That was awesome. And after that as well, because I mean, obviously we don't just talk about one bit of material and just move on and never talk about it again. When you're especially talking about such an integral, complicated machine like the human body, you never stop talking about topics. Everything just builds on itself. Almost every time when I would ask a question to the class related to the ANS, the autonomic nervous system, she was almost always the first one to put her hand up and actually and get the question right as well. I mean, that she got that system. And I was able to have her get that by providing her with the classroom lectures at home. So you can see how this creates a more expansive learning environment. Our students are more connected to us. We're providing them with the lecture. In class, we spend more time doing activities, assessing how they're applying that knowledge to real-world applications. We don't have to lecture as much. We can moderate. That's kind of fun. I mean, has anyone in here flipped a lesson before? Anyone? Okay. I mean, did you enjoy it? I mean, was it neat to go around and, kind of interact with the students? It's cool to do that. And what's neat about that is they get instant feedback right there. They don't have to go home, wait till the next class period for you to grade the exam and come back and either, be happy or bang your head on the desk. Or both. So like I said, I mean, this has been working for me, and that's why I talk about it so much, that's why I believe in it, because when done right, it works. And it doesn't always work. I had a discussion with a student from another college not too long ago who was in a biochemistry class. The biochem professor made them watch lecture videos, and they came to class, and they had nothing but bad things to say about it. Is that the fault of this idea of how this method of teaching, or is that the fault of the professor for not providing them with a good in-class activity or assessment? I'm going to lean more towards the second one. I didn't get all the details, but that would be my guess, because there are some people out there that are just elaborate lecturers. But you can't just give someone a good lecture video and then bomb in the classroom when you're assessing what they did on their own. Now, the cool thing about doing this as well is that when you're putting yourself out there, if you publicly, put your, lecture media on, something like YouTube, Sophia, Vimeo, whatnot, you're putting yourself out there to the rest of the world. There are other students out there who could benefit from your teaching style, your ability to deliver a message about a topic. These are some of the comments that I get in my YouTube channel. That, to me, makes all this worthwhile, aside from, obviously my student success. The fact that I can actually help other students as well, all over the world, that's awesome. And, I only pick the positive ones, but obviously I get a few on there that aren't fans. Fine. That's good. My teaching style isn't for everyone. I'm assuming all your teaching styles aren't for everyone either. That's A-okay. We're all different people. We have different mentalities. But if we can help as many people along the way, why not? So again, the idea behind this is to move from the teacher-centered classroom to the more student-centered classroom, to create a more active learning environment, to become more engaged with your students, not just inside the classroom, but also outside the classroom. It's funny. I didn't go to school to be a teacher. I did. Then I changed my mind, studied physiology, and then because I didn't want to teach, and here I am. I'm a flip-flopper, I guess. I'd be a good politician. Just kidding. But that was my dream, was to be that man in front of the classroom, just this mountain of knowledge to be looked up upon. And then I started doing this and realized this is better. Times are changing. I think it's time we change with them. So like I said, I hope this presentation gave you all ideas to basically, you know, connect with your students better and just create a more active, overall active and engaging teaching and learning environment and with the overall purpose of making your students successful. And if you, I put my contact information up there because if you all have an idea, if you create a lesson, if you have a question for me, by all means, contact me. I'd be more than happy to give my input to talk about this to, you know, again, just help out. That's why I'm here today. So thank you. Any questions? I did that good of a job or that bad of a job? Hopefully the first one, right?
I've got a quick question.
Yes.
Because you're having your class, you know, your flipped classroom, that class session, as well as the students watching at home,
yeah,
it does increase class time. Now, believe me, I think what you're doing is wonderful.
Yeah.
I wondered if students ever complain that, okay, I have to watch this and then I have to go to that, and how you deal with that.
No, that's a good question, because that is something that it's something to talk about. Are we actually increasing the workload on the students by doing this? Yes and no. Yes, just because I think this is just weird for students at first, because most of us grew up through the traditional style of teaching, you know, you bring homework home and all that. But when you're providing them with these lectures, these flipped lectures essentially, that essentially is the supplement for the time they would spend at home doing the homework. You know, so it's kind of it takes experimentation, and it takes obviously some good lesson planning. You know, you have to be willing to make mistakes and self-assess. But in a nutshell, it's a trade-off. You know, it's a trade-off. So like I said, instead of the time spent doing homework and just reading through the chapters, they're instead watching lecture videos. You may even decrease their time, I mean, if you create a good enough video where you create an effective delivery. And, I mean, when you have them do an activity to obviously go with the video, you know, like a brief writing assignment, do some math problems, maybe do a small case study if you're a biology teacher. I mean, you're not going to give them a full-on, you know, load of homework. You're just going to give them something to basically come in and tee off the classroom activity with. So like I said, it may seem like it at first, but as you do it more and you get used to it, it just becomes a trade-off.
So I have a question. It's maybe the flip side of that. Is there any resistance on the part of the teachers who have to perhaps put in the effort to make the videos or whatever the content is, and then in addition teach the classes?
Oh, yeah. I've made some people actually angry talking about this, or maybe it's just me. But there is resistance to it because, you know, like I said before, this is going to take extra work to create this lecture media. It does. I mean, I spent a lot of time putting these videos. I have over 100 videos on my YouTube channel, and most of those are not 10-minute videos. We're talking 35 to an hour long videos, 35 minutes to an hour long video. So yeah, that took time. But it wound up saving me time in the long run, because like I said, once the media is created, once I put the lesson together, it's done. You know, unless I think of another way to teach it or deliver it, then yeah, obviously. But so yeah, in the front end or in the beginning, it will take extra time because you're not just changing. I mean, you're changing your philosophy towards how you're teaching. That's not an easy thing to do, to make anybody just change their mentality or their philosophy or their ideals towards a practice. So, yeah, there will be resistance towards it. There will be some difficulties. But when you start to do it and realize it and basically stop complaining, because that's what I hear. I don't, you know, I've there's only been one teacher that I've ever talked to that actually we had good discussions about that with. The rest, they were just complaining because they didn't want to do more work, realistically. But when you start to do this, you see the value of how much this works, then it doesn't matter. So
Question from our online participant.
Yes.
Do you use any tools to verify the what videos students are watching and if they're watching the entire video? And then I would have a follow-up question from that. Does that have any effect on their grade?
Good question. Unfortunately, I don't have anything specific to that. Because obviously, you know, like if you're using YouTube, for example, you can count the hits on there. But, I mean, someone in Egypt could be watching a video. So, I mean, it's hard to track the hit count on that. So that's why I think that's why I think it's important to provide them with, you know, some activity to go along with the video to make sure that they're, you know, that they're watching it and they're doing the activity right. And so on. So yeah, it's difficult to really flat out track, you know, individual hits on that. So that's why it's important to provide activities with that. So I hope that answers the question for the viewer. So
no follow up from that person, but there is another question from the online audience, and that is, have you looked at overall test scores and have those improved as a result? You mentioned one student, but this person is wondering if you've looked at entire classes to see if there's an improvement.
I think that says so right there. I mean, obviously, if I retained 20% more students when I started doing this, obviously the test scores have gone up. I mean, because I wouldn't be hanging on to them otherwise. So, yes, they have. Absolutely have. I mean, I'll let the numbers speak for themselves on that. Other questions? Well, if there are any other questions, thank you all for attending. I appreciate it.